This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey there, Next Picture Show listeners. As mentioned at the end of last week's episode, our next official pairing has been delayed a week due to a series of complications involving holiday schedules and screening times. In the meantime, though, we're sharing a bonus episode originally recorded for the Patreon, in which Keith Scott and Tasha got together to talk through their recollections, fond and otherwise, of VHS and the video store era. Check it out and enjoy the rush of nostalgia, or if you're one of our younger listeners, marvel at the strange tales of box art, late fees, and auto rewinders. If you like what you hear and are not already a Patreon supporter, consider becoming one over at patreon.com/nextpictureshow, where we release other bonus episodes along with ad-free versions of the main show. And then check back next week for part one of our discussion of Luca Guadagnino's new Bones and All and Terrence Malick's 1973 directorial debut, Badlands.
Hello, Next Picture Show Patreon supporters. You are listening to a bonus episode of the show. We have no fancy name for it, just a bonus episode, a straight up bonus from us. I'm Keith Phipps. I'm here with
Scott Tobias
and Tosh Robinson.
And we want to wax nostalgic a little bit, but also like think about what it means for the present, about video stores and VHS. I can tell you kind of what got my mind going in this direction. One, there's a new Netflix show called Blockbuster, which I have not watched yet. But, you know, it's about a video store, and which is an unusual place to set a show now. But it's one that people our age, and perhaps a little younger, perhaps a little older, was a very familiar part of our movie-going habits. The other thing was, I've been listening to Video Archives, the Quentin Tarantino, Roger Avery podcast, which is named after the video store where they worked. And the premise of that is they watch a movie, two movies, usually per episode, sometimes three, actually often three, now that I think about it. So they have to watch it on a video, a VHS copy from the store's archives, which Tarantino purchased when the store went under. So they sit around, they watch a VHS copy of some films, they talk about it. And what really kind of got me thinking in this direction was this very specific way they get into the details of the VHS boxes and the distributors and where it came from. So it's like they'll talk about where it was in the store, how much they paid for it, but also like the size of the box. Like hearing them describe like, you know, different size and the sort of the branding for like Columbia TriStar Home Video from a certain era is like, there's a little Proustian reaction to that. It's like, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. So I don't know. I just kind of wanted to just, you know, talk a little bit about the VHS era, the video store era with my co-host here. Let's start with some beginnings. Can you remember what your first video store that you patronized was?
I actually wouldn't be able to tell you. I think it would have to have been a video store in my hometown in Perrysburg, Ohio. At some point in the 80s, we did have, you know, a VHS that I think that far back. Mm-hmm. But I don't have super strong memories of renting. The one thing I do remember is that at some point we did rent Wolfen was rented because it was the first R-rated film I ever saw, and I still remember the head that gets lopped off and rolls towards the camera, and then you get kind of the chattering teeth effect of the head that I remember very vividly. But I don't necessarily remember the store, believe it or not. What about you all?
Mine was a chain. I'm not sure how expansive it was, like how much it was an East Coast thing, because a lot of these, I was kind of digging a little bit into the history of video stores, and a lot of them were chains. But then, you know, there were your random indies. Video Village was the one that we used to go to, and that was a chain, at least on the East Coast. I don't know how extensive it was. And it really wasn't functionally that much different from a Blockbuster, or when I went off to college, the local chain was That's Rentertainment. And there were a bunch of those in town. You know, it was exactly the same kind of thing. A big room that kind of resembled a library with mostly VHSs rather than books at the time. You know, just shelves and shelves and shelves with racks sized for VHS tapes, which often lived in those, like, you know, the big clamshell cases that kind of make a loud popping noise when you get them, pull them open, and then a loud popping noise when you push them closed. So, I remember as a kid, like wandering through the racks at Video Village, where we would go as a family. But, you know, ultimately, our parents, usually our dad was the one that took us, you know, he would go off and figure out what we were going to watch. And we would just be kind of allowed to like wander free and look at things. So I often found myself kind of, you know, sneaking over to the cult section. I was still really into animation. But, you know, if you go into the cult section, you get to see things like Wizards and the Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, Butcher Job, Warriors of the Wind. You know, these things had these covers that suggested like, oh, hey, heavy metal was probably there, too. Adults watch animation, too, and it's probably more exciting and adventurous than the stuff that you're watching. And then I would also go into the horror section and, you know, look at all the lurid horror movie covers, which were, you know, very exciting to somebody who had literally never seen a horror movie. You know, it's pretty typical these days, I think, for kids to like get exposed to horror movies like pretty young if their parents watch them at home. But I remember that to this day, the first time I watched a horror movie, and it was Gremlins in the theater, and I did not register at all that it was comedic, because there were a handful of very scary bits, you know, the bit in the lab where the gremlin gets loose. So the video store, the horror section, the video store was just like this, you know, palace of forbidden delights that I didn't get to experience yet. Like looking at the cover art for Alien and wondering what that movie could possibly be like. It was kind of a little adventure in its own right.
Yeah, mine was, and looking back, I realized I was quite lucky, was an indie store opened in the early 80s. The first place I had a membership, it was called David G's in Inglewood. And they had, it was just a big nondescript room, but they had a lot of movies. And they had like copies of Premiere and Leonard Maltin guides out on a table. And they had, when they expanded, they had a cave of horror, which is like this paper mache cave that you had to go in to look at horror movies, which was wonderful. And they had a cult section. And I think that in itself was a fairly influential thing. And I can kind of work my way through that. Let's check out this weird stuff, or this stuff I'd only read about in books. I had my own card. I could rent what I wanted up to a point. I think the first thing I rented was the original Frankenstein, which was one of those movies I'd never seen, but I'd only read about in books. And I miss those kind of places. I also miss, you know, the effect. I mean, I know there are digital age equivalents, but the idea that a store would open up in your hometown and suddenly all you could have access to all these weird movies, or like, you know, John Waters films could, you know, make it to the suburbs of Dayton, Ohio, where I was growing up. I mean, these things were hugely influential to me, and it was just kind of there behind a storefront. And I don't know. I do miss that. I do wonder, like, you know, if the streaming era has the same kind of like accidental discovery. I know it does not have box art, which, you know, I don't want to just be a physical media curmudgeon, but I don't think there was anything that was really improved upon in the DVD or Blu-ray era, and certainly not in the stream era, than the VHS boxes, which was just a wonderful, like, little, potentially lurid, sometimes beautiful way to package a film. And just the variable boxes we've been talking about. There was the, you know, the clamshell that you talked about with, like, slightly puffy qualities. It kind of became like the default for children's films. But also, before the box became kind of standardized, you could find, like, some early 80s stuff that was, like, different sizes that kind of stand out on the shelves. There was an appeal to that. And I also think there's an appeal to the copy on the back, like, that would sell you the movie, that in a way that wasn't just sort of a dry, you know, the dry descriptions that you get when you're browsing on streaming services. Maybe I'm just, you know, again, nostalgia might be overwhelming here, but am I wrong here?
I mean, we're definitely all looking back to an era that was formative for us as, you know, right, film lovers. So, of course, we're going to have an affection for it. I mean, I will say I certainly enjoyed the experience of looking at VHS box art, which often it seemed like more talent and thought and effort went into painting that art than into making the movies. And, you know, finding out the difference between what the box promised and what the movie was often a kind of entertaining surprise. But when we're talking about kind of our video store memories, the first thing I brought up was, as I say, my dad usually picked the movies, and he brought home this movie called The Perils of Gwendolyn in the Land of the Yik Yak. I went and looked up the box starring Tawny Katane. Mm-hmm. I went up and looked up the original VHS box art for it, and it's unquestionably a pastiche of the Raiders of the Lost Ark, like the famous poster, like visually, stylistically, just in terms of like the light and the font and the art. It's meant to evoke exactly that sort of thing. And I'm pretty sure that he rented it thinking that he was going to, you know, get some Raiders of the Lost Ark like movie. And instead, it's a softcore French import with a ton of naked boobs, a lot of women running around in like sci-fi Amazon underwear made out of vinyl or plastic or something like that, with their entire asses hanging out. And the climax of the film, is the heroine being given the right to have public sex in front of the queen with the male intrigue.
So you watched the whole thing? It wasn't a thing where it's like, wait a minute, this is not appropriate. We can't watch this. It's like, no, we've already paid our rental. We're gonna watch this thing start to finish.
I don't know if my father was like so mesmerized by it or so embarrassed by it, or, you know, if we went home and watched it before he got to it while he was off, you know, at work or doing dinner or something. I don't have that kind of burning memory that you have of adolescent humiliation of watching sex in front of your families in a movie for the first time. But I do remember watching it and thinking, I am not supposed to be seeing this.
I'm looking now, and like the VHS art that you're referring to is very not provocative.
not in the slightest.
One. Yeah, but I'm looking at another poster of a film. I'm not sure where it was released, but it's just called Gwendolyn, and it is two women in chains, not wearing a lot of clothing. So I think that perhaps that might be a more accurate representation of the contents.
Continuing to watch it reminds me quite a bit of the time that my grandmother, whose favorite movie was Sister Act, and was a very strict Catholic, someone thought that she and her best friend should go and see There's Something About Mary. And she and she was so mortified by it that they actually did not leave. They stayed the whole way because they didn't want to be seen leaving the theater, which, you know, they'd have to leave the theater eventually, but that was their thinking. So they kind of stayed it out through the whole thing. So maybe that's the psychology there. It's like you're in it, you know, it'd be too conspicuous to stop.
Well, Keith, one of the things you didn't mention about the backs of those VHS boxes is that they would very often have actual still photos from the film itself. So you would have that, you know, fantastic cover art. The cover art for the horror movie Prophecy comes to mind as like the poster haunted me. It's just a terrifying poster. And then you get that box and you flip it over and there are photos of, you know, a big wet plastic monster
It's just a very fake looking mutant bear. That's a movie. Are we talking about the same one? Or are we talking about the same one?
Exactly. The Frankenheimer. But that was also part of the, part of the little adventure when you're young is like, you look at the front art and you're like, all right, what secrets does this hide? And you flip the box over and like, look at these teeny tiny little pictures that tell you a little bit more about what the film actually looks like. And I would not be surprised if with Tawny Katane and her Yik Yaks, my father like flipped it over and seen some not naked women, but women in provocative costumes, and maybe some description of like of sci-fi adventure of naughty proportions, and thought that he was maybe going to slip in a little fun that we wouldn't understand, and didn't realize it was just going to be naked boobs from here till Tuesday.
How can you resist this? So, veteran suspense director John Frankenheimer manages to present Prophecy, all caps, as a quote unquote monster movie, as well as a suspenseful tale about the deadly forces which result from the pollution of our environment. I mean, sold. I'm there. Oh wait, let me look at these pictures. No, it looks like a big wet bear.
Either of you remember any experiences like that where what was on the box was not what was in the box effectively in a movie?
There's a wonderful book called came out a few years ago called Portable Grindhouse, The Lost Art of the VHS Box, and it is filled with like these wonderful, it's almost entirely horror and exploitation films, and they certainly are promising more than these movies really. Maybe more than any movie could deliver, which is, it's kind of the equivalent of, from the same era, like these amazing artwork you'd find on Atari cartridges. And then you'd play the game and it would just be a few little blocks going back and forth.
Were you ever that disappointed? Because it's like, you knew what the limits of the graphics are going to be.
Yeah.
You knew you were not going to get some incredibly detailed...
Say with movies, like you know, it's you're in the hands of a huckster. I think unless this is your first movie you've ever rented,
though, right? You don't necessarily, depending on who you are, you may not be aware of how much of a budget might have gone into something or how big a production something is, or you could be legitimately fooled. I mean, if you've got Raiders of the Lost Ark-y looking box art, you may be thinking, hey, this is, this may not be Raiders of the Lost Ark, but this is kind of going to be along the same lines. It'll be a lot of fun. Let's take it home and I'll show it to my my kid.
There are levels, because you look at the Prophecy box art and you think it's not going to look exactly like this because the Prophecy box art is very obviously drawn, like it's a painting. So, but horror movies of the time could be Poltergeist, which like has a very distinctive and definitive and striking look and quality. And then there's John Frankenheimer's Wet Mutant Bear. So, yeah, I think you're in the hands of a huckster is exactly the right description. But, sometimes the huckster sells you a pig in a poke and sometimes he sells you a kick in the ass.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
One thing I would say, though, I mean, this is just to get to the appeal of video stores and browsing video stores. It's just that having that ability to step back and kind of get a larger sense of things. It's a different kind of browsing, and that's true that's true of any kind of online retail experience. You don't know, if you go to the Gap.com or something, it's not the same as walking into a Gap. You're not like getting a sense of like what everything looks like before you zero in on what it is that you want. And you're certainly, I mean, streaming services, you're getting, the weirdest videos. Each one is the weirdest video store ever devised because it's got so many weird gaps,
Here's a video store dedicated entirely to the Paramount catalog.
Yeah, right. And if you're interested in one thing, then you want to see a bunch of films. If you like Scorsese, you want to see a bunch of Scorsese films. It's like, well, we've got three, three random ones. So to kind of be able to step back and get a sense of it. I mean, and obviously not every video store was created equal. You had ones that had very limited stocks, and you had ones that served you know, niche audiences, which are always the ones I loved and the one I eventually, you know, sort of worked for. But it, no matter what the case was, you could at least get a feel for what was out there, and then you can kind of go from there. And everything did take on kind of an exotic life of its own. I mean, I remember when I was really starting to get into the movies, while I was working at a movie theater, you know, the only real game in town for us video store wise was a Blockbuster. And, you know, the horror section was, you know, I was certainly drawn to that. And there were a lot of big boxes there too. And then I was also drawn to, because I was a teenage boy, you know, Blockbuster would not carry NC-17 rated movies, but they did have a 18 plus, or they had some kind of a section that was basically for unrated movies. And so you couldn't see Henry and June, but you could see like nude aerobics or something. That's how I saw the Ed Wood film, Orgy of the Dead, because it was in that section. That was quite an innervating experience, even for somebody who would have been theoretically up for watching one woman after another undress and dance weirdly before a campfire. But anyway, it is an experience. I mean, you just to kind of go in and get a tactile sense of things.
Yeah, I actually saw Orgy of the Dead through my local video store, too, when I was working on a story about Ed Wood and just watching all of the movies of his that were available on VHS at the time. Mm-hmm. That movie's not good in any way. I would say it's not even really a movie. But one of the things about video stores that was interesting is like Blockbuster would kind of push the new releases because they cost an extra buck to rent. But apart from that, you know, that triage, that here are the premium rentals, everything at the video store was kind of equal, you know, like Netflix or whoever is going to continually push certain titles at you that they produced. You know, they want you to watch Stranger Things, or they want you to watch Bright because they dumped a ton of money into it and nobody wanted to watch it. But the video store was kind of egalitarian. Like they authentically didn't have any financial incentive to sell you on Romancing the Stone over Orgy of the Dead. They were all just, you know, it's your $1.99 or your $2.99 or like whatever you're paying or whatever your coupon says. It's all exactly the same product as far as the video store was concerned. So, you know, whether you're watching nude aerobics or 400 blows is kind of all the same to them. And that's not something you can say for any of the streaming services, because either they've got a theme like Shudder or they've got, you know, an ethos like Criterion, or they've got just, you need to watch stuff from our company. I think maybe one of the joys of the video store was just, it's just all there mixed up together.
Yep, here it is.
Yeah.
Wander in. You're wandering around a bunch of movies. It was an effective device.
Yeah, I mean, the organization was designed, I think, to kind of lead you. I mean, they would have, you know, Blockbuster had kind of that outer wall that was all new releases, and it would have, you know, and large titles would have multiple copies on the shelves, and I think you could kind of utilize it that way and just kind of ignore the rest of the store. So in that sense, you know, and then pricing would get a little bit funky too. You'd pay more for a shorter rental period for new stuff, and then catalog stuff you'd pay less for a longer rental period. That was pretty common too.
But I mean, the counter to that, you know, all films are equal in this store concept is that like the curational quality of the video store, which I think when people are waxing nostalgic about video stores, that's what they talk about more than anything else, is the ability to go in and like talk to the people there.
Yes.
and get a recommendation. Like I always just come back to Terry Gilliam's Fisher King and the video store in that, and how people like Kathy Najimy can walk in and say, I'm looking for this precise type of movie. What do you have for me? How much did you guys get into the curatorial aspect when you were working at your respective video stores?
Yeah, I should say it. Scott and I are both video store employee veterans in the sense that, well, I mean, I worked at a Four Star Video Heaven in Madison, Wisconsin for a year. And it was kind of it was immediately after grad school, I did what you do, which is start working at a video store, put that master's degree in English to work. It was kind of the film school I never really had. I just take home a bunch of, in two movies a night. Sometimes I watch both of them, sometimes just one. But it was like, you know, where I was before, I didn't really have a lot of access to Hal Hartley movies or Jim Jarmusch movies. And suddenly this being a very good video store, I had access to all of them. And it was, you know, a pretty wonderful experience. So in terms of like curating it myself, that really wasn't my department. I did develop a few thoughts. You know, essentially, I feel like the fewer genre categories you have, the better, if only because you'll have to answer fewer questions behind the counter as to, you know, where to find Basic Instinct if you don't have like an erotic thriller section versus putting it under mystery or whatever, wherever you would put Basic Instinct.
Yeah, I mean, my experience was pretty wild. I worked at a store called Video Library in Athens, Georgia. This was also the same period as Keith after graduating. You know, I had a bit of a townie period before graduate school. And it was the best video store in Athens by far. But it was kind of on the edge of town. And it was distinguished by a very large cult film section. You know, we had all the Something Weird movies. We had all these Hong Kong movies. Actually, those were starting to come in bunches, the Hong Kong action thrillers. We had this huge foreign film section behind the counter. And then we had Laserdiscs, but what we also had was pornography, tons of it, like just thousands and thousands of porn films and Laserdiscs. And you were not supposed to have that stuff. That was not actually something that we were, I guess, legally allowed to have. But it was tolerated because what we would do, or what I wouldn't do, what the manager would do, would he would take the boxes, which were large. These were large boxes that would come in. He would cut the pictures out and put them onto little note cards, and then write on the note cards the name of the movie, the actors in it, and what kind of stuff you can expect. And then he'd file them, and so people would come in and look through the files, and we would rent those things at $5 a piece, which was over double what we were renting anything else. And
I did not know there was an analog version of Mr. Skin before Mr. Skin came along.
Yeah, it was him. It was this guy. He had horrible penmanship, and he had a glue stick and a pair of scissors. And that's how the system worked. And we didn't have a computer. We were using it. Everything was pen and paper. Everything was cash. You know, I mean, it's crazy just to think about what it was like, but that led to a lot of interesting curation situations for me behind the counter because all of that money that we were earning on porn rentals was going back into the store for all of this art shit that we were getting. I mean, like, so the manager would give me catalogs and be like, you know, what should we get? And I'd be like, well, we should get that Mizoguchi film, and we should get that Ozu film, and we should get, you know, all of this stuff to put to stock up these sections. And so there was that, and we'd have people coming in looking for those types of films. And then we'd also have these guys, these regulars who would come in oftentimes like right when the store opened to just come, you know, get stacks of porn tapes to bring home and come back later in the afternoon because they had obviously dubbed them at home.
Sure.
And I'd have to know, you know, I mean, I got to know, you know, all the different sort of strata of the business, like who the major stars were, like what, you know, what specific things people, it was an insane time. But that was Video Library. Beloved. It was a very beloved store. It was a great store, but it was quirky to work there for sure.
Any passages of Shakespeare you memorized, just they had to go out the window to understand so you could better convey what's on these porn tapes, right, Scott?
Something like that.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, Dasha. Go ahead.
Maybe this is a naive question, but if it was a cash only, no computer business, what incentive was there to keep people from just walking off with the tapes and not coming back?
Well, they couldn't rent from us again. I mean, we were keeping track of who was renting stuff. So, I mean, it's not like the same person could come back. We had a membership. You had to be a member to rent. I mean, if you wanted to do that, I suppose that would be, you could do that, but you could do it once. You know, you could just steal our stuff. Just like any other video store, you could rent something from a video store and never bring it back. You just would never rent from that video store again.
I guess that makes sense. I'm picturing, somebody comes back to a Blockbuster Video with Star Wars like a month late. They've got a month of accumulated fines. But, if you come back to your place with you know, the Anal Invader 27, your favorite porn film, which you didn't dub at home because you don't have that technology, and you've just been keeping it. Like, how would you, would you charge people late fees?
No. So it was pen and paper. So we would write out their name and number and address or whatever information they had, what they rented, how much they rented it for, when they what it was due, and then we'd file it away. So it was all, they'd get a copy, we'd get a copy, et cetera. So it was annoying because it was so slow, but we had a record of when everything came in, and we charged late fees like any other thing. It was just a cash operation, and in retrospect it was like, I remember payday was like, you wouldn't get like a normal check. Like, you'd get a check, but then you just basically at the end of the night you'd sign it, and then they go to the back and just give you the cash, which, you know, I don't know how on the level that was. But
are you sure you didn't work in a porn warehouse and they told you it was a video store?
It was a crazy time. And if you want to read more about it, I did write about, there was a piece on that is still free for anyone on our newsletter that I wrote called Tomb of the Unknown Video Store. That's kind of about my time there, but it was great. I mean, people who knew that store, they loved it. I mean, it was a wonderful place.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Do either of you have any, like, really memorable standout customer stories?
Oh, gosh. I think I tried to block out as much customer interaction as possible. You know, there were some really nice ones. And there was, one guy who would stroll up every day with a coffee and say, could you throw this away for me? And to the point where I just started greeting him at the door with a garbage can. not at all passive aggressive. Great customer service. That's how I looked at that.
That was terrible customer service. I was like, yeah, I mean, there were my people, people who would come and and rent the kind of stuff that I liked and was into, but like, a lot of porn people, and just like, just generally, I'm not a people person, really, not a customer service type of guy. And it was just, when it was an empty store and somebody entered, it was like, they had to have felt just like the glare from me, just like, why are you here? Get out of my store. it's better for me to just sit here and listen to Buzzcocks music or watch a Laserdisc than to have to interact with you in any way.
Yeah, you guys are definitely reminding me of High Fidelity here.
Yeah, no, I was personable, but not snooty.
I was happy to recommend stuff. I did enjoy that. As long as I was like, but I also kind of baffled by like, what's a good foreign film? Questions like that. I do remember. I mean, it was in Madison, Wisconsin, and there was certainly a heavy stoner contingent. So you can kind of watch films go in and out of Vogue. I remember City of Lost Children was just a very, very popular rent there for a while for a certain crowd.
Yeah.
I have a friend who used to work at a video store in Chicago. Not too long before video stores just kind of faded out. Who reported a customer coming in fairly wroth with a copy of Lars von Trier's Dogville, which, if you may remember, is a very stylized film where the entire set is just a giant open warehouse where the buildings are delineated on the ground in chalk. It's all very stagey and conceptual. And the customer complained that the DVD was broken because the sets weren't showing up. And wanted a second new copy of Dogville, one where the sets worked.
And was this possible?
As it turned out, it was not an available technology, but I believe my friend, in the spirit of this same kind of customer service you're talking about, convinced them to like go home and fiddle with the knobs on their TV, because it was probably a TV setting that was keeping the sets from showing up.
You just have to explain to the customer that it's a Brechtian conceit. And then that'll be like, I see, I get it now.
Oh, right, of course, yes, Brechtian conceit.
Yes.
It's all coming together for me now. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong to make this association, but for me, it was always, when I think video stores, I always think VHS. I was never, you know, I certainly rented my share of DVDs, but almost kind of felt like a different era for the video store. And that's probably very tied to, very specifically to my age. I think the one thing the thing I'm not nostalgic for is the picture quality of VHS.
Oh,
you
my know? Gosh. Yes.
Yeah. Like, can we stop with that nostalgia? Like, I get it. But like, you know, and I'm fully on board with like LPs, you know, because I think they still sound great. They're great. But like, that's one part of the VHS era I'd be happy to leave behind. Like, the images I'm getting now from streaming, from Blu-rays, from DVDs, whatever, they look great.
Like, yeah,
I would have loved to have seen so many movies that way in the VHS era. I don't want to wax nostalgic too much about the look of VHS. It is, you saw everything was in the wrong aspect ratio. The resolution was crap. I mean, it was just an early technology that was improved upon.
And you had to fiddle around with the knobs, or you might get just like black borders on the side. Yeah,
I had a good auto tracker though. My last VHS player, man. Whew.
Do you remember when they started introducing rewinders, so you didn't have to basically put wear and tear on your VHS unit by rewinding the video when you're done? You could just stick it into the rewinder, and it seemed like the most exciting peripheral, like the single service, single purpose piece of electronics that's basically just a spinning head.
Oh yeah, some of them. I remember there's some that like had like shaped like race cars to make them.
We
fun.
Had one that we had one yeah. that was not only shaped like a race car. It had little headlights on the front, and you'd slide the VHS into it and then pop it down, and like while the tape was in and it was rewinding, the headlights would light up.
It's not even a matter of being kind. Rewind is have fun while you rewind. You know, it's just like, what a terrific outing.
Heathens though that weren't rewinding their videotapes. Absolute monsters.
Well, yeah, you know what? Was it that big a deal? I mean, I always rewind.
It was
mine.
A big deal. It took forever.
Mine, but I guess.
Well, that's why you have your in-store rewinder.
You get annoyed when you worked at a video store and people were return tapes to you that were not rewound?
We might have charged a fee. I can't remember. There might have been.
Oh, my goodness.
I feel like Blockbuster did charge a fee, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah, you know, the other thing I don't miss about VHS quality, particularly VHS quality when it comes to rental stores, is finding the point on the VHS that people have rewound over 1,000 times. So you're watching Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and suddenly Phoebe Cates is getting out of the pool topless, and then it's just static because people have rewound and rewatched that segment so many times that they've worn the magnetism off the tape.
Yes.
And it's like, I don't know if you've ever had the experience of getting a book, borrowing a book from a friend, or getting a book from the library, and you open up and it just falls open to the sex scene because the the spine is broken there. But that's what it was like with VHS tapes.
Oh,
you
totally,
could definitely tell the places that people had gone back and forth and back and forth
paused.
Over.
Yeah, like, that was that the kind of boob shot in 16 Candles was kind of the classic example of that. It was just, you know, of the tape just getting super snowy around that area. You know, and I think this way you could see them without like the boing sound effect that the great auteur John Hughes put over the on the soundtrack.
PG nudity. What a time to be alive.
Yes, what a time to be alive.
So I guess we should maybe talk a little bit about the different eras. To me, the golden age, in my experience, was the earlier years of the video store, when it was dominated by a lot of independent and locally owned stores before, you know, the Blockbusters came in. Like, I remember talking, I tracked down David G, the owner of David G's Video on Facebook, and sent him a nice, you know, thank you note for having such a cool store. And elsewhere on his page, he mentioned how he got out of the business because he could see which way the wind was blowing, which was that a Blockbuster moved in across the street. So he sold out to Premier Video, which was another, you know, sizable chain, at least where I lived. But it lacked the personal touch of the independent video stores. Although I think at least, you know, those survived longer, like independent record stores, they lasted longer than you might think. Unlike independent record stores, you can't really find them anymore. But it was kind of a neat thing where each town would have its own like little video store, you know, done up in the style of whoever owned it.
Yeah, when I was in college, the one in that vein was called Tofu Hut. And it was run by this guy who was just a big cinephile. And it was where I first encountered anime on VHS, later on DVD. It was the era of streamlined video when companies were first starting to import anime. And my experience with anime had basically been, you know, stuff like Voltron and Star Blazers. Very, very badly dubbed, heavily cut up, and screening at like 5 a.m. on Saturday morning cartoons. And suddenly you could get like an entire series, very badly dubbed often, but like, you know, watch it more or less at your leisure at home as it was coming out. And I actually had a column in the student newspaper where I just reviewed whatever anime Tofu Hut got in. But you often saw that kind of thing with those little video stores, like especially the really small ones. They would have the stamp of the owner's personality and their own specific traits. And like if they were really into like Japanese drama or anime or, you know, Spanish or Mexican imports or a specific type of horror or cult film, like whatever, you would see them basically using the store to kind of subsidize being able to buy those tapes and share them with other people effectively for money. But, you know, it's just a kind of way, instead of sitting at home and paying at that point, like what, $50 or $60 if you wanted to like buy a VHS movie, kind of the equivalent of what they're trying to do today with, what they tried to do for a very brief time with like prestige movie rentals, the idea that you'd pay to see Tower Heist, you'd pay $60 to rent Tower Heist while it was still in theaters. It was just a much more workable model if you were running a video store and you could buy that movie that you'd always wanted to see and then rent it out to other people.
I should point out, by the way, just before I forget about it, is that 4-Star Video, now 4-Star Video Cooperative is still open in Madison, Wisconsin. I visited it fairly recently. It's looking good. It's still a great selection of films. If you're in Wisconsin or Madison, Wisconsin, you want to rent a movie, it's a great place. Different location, though.
Video library is closed.
Yeah.
I'm afraid, but...
Yeah, Tofu Hut apparently long gone.
When we moved, it's kind of a good news, bad news situation by our new house. I live within easy walking distance of one of the few video stores still open in Chicago. The bad news is it's not that kind of video store. They have quote unquote romantic DVDs.
That's sweet.
One thing too about with regard to the independent video stores is that if you have a memory of them, then I think the nostalgia that you see connected to Blockbuster in particular feels a little misplaced. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same thing with kind of Barnes and Nobles and Borders and their heyday. It was like, we tend to look at those places still with affection. And of course, I'm very grateful for the Barnes and Noble that still exists not that far from me here in Chicago. But you know, if you remember what they replaced, then maybe you feel a little less great about it. And the one of the subtext, I guess, of, or maybe it was a little bit of the text, but of the piece that I wrote about Video Library for the reveal is like, what was it like to work at a place that was loved, that was independent, that was sensibility driven, and that people loved, because in the impact that it had on me as, you know, going forward, because I know, you know, the three of us have certainly been involved in publications that were sensibility driven that people loved, and what a difference that kind of makes to you as a person working for that place, and then also to people who are visit that place, whether they're renting videos or reading articles. It matters, you know. and I think that when the landscape becomes totally dominated by chains, by large entities, by things that are not so niche driven, you kind of lose touch with that feeling of just like, oh, this is really you could see that fingerprints behind this whole operation, like this is there's something kind of special and unique about this place.
Yeah, the difference between an anonymous, the latest and local iteration of your identical franchise, and a mom and pop shop that is built around an idea. Yeah, you've got me missing Tofu Hut now. And just being able to walk in and have a conversation with the guy who ran the place about what you'd watched and how you felt about it, and the likelihood was if it was there, he'd probably already watched it and like had some thoughts about it.
You'll be happy to know there is still a Tofu Hut, Tasha, but it seems to be a Korean restaurant in Las Vegas. So
yeah, I did a little Googling before this because I was sort of curious whether it was still around, as a DVD store or something like that. And couldn't find enough about it to know when it went under, but definitely do not think it's in the world anymore.
I guess we should wind things down, but I guess the other thing that's kind of spurred me thinking about this was the few articles about the rise of VHS collecting. I don't know if anyone else has followed this at all, but there are some, video games, I think now VHS have kind of joined the absurdly overpriced collector's market. Like if you have an original sealed copy of Super Mario Brothers in your house, please, pay for my kid's college with it. But it is, I wonder if on the one hand, of course, it's another overpriced collectors, whole collectible market is a little absurd. I kind of like, these objects getting their respect, that they're kind of viewed as not just the junk and thrift store fodder, that they're actually, there's pieces of history. And I'm happy to see that happen.
I don't know how much I can be happy about or revere somebody who is looking for a sealed copy of a movie that came out in the 80s. Like the VHS itself would have come out in the 80s. It's an artifact representing a movie that was never watched and probably never will be watched because the collector is not going to want to break the plastic on it. And that just kind of seems
also
sad.
Why would
me.
You? It's going to look like crap.
it's going to be crappy quality, and it's not a great movie to begin with.
Oh, man.
But yeah, it just, I'm into movies for the experience of watching movies and thinking about movies and talking about movies with people. So I can only feel sad about something that it never fulfilled its purpose. The latest Pixar movie is just going to be a bunch of VHS tapes still in their wrapping and them dealing with their mortality and their sadness about it.
I kind of do like them as objects, though. Like I just hooked up. I found a unused or packed away in the garage at my mom's house a still functioning VCR, and I did buy. For a particular reason, I bought Blood Simple on VHS. Anyone, Scott?
I remember that box very well.
What do you remember? But here's the thing: the actual Blood Simple still looks weird to me because VHS is where I first saw it, and VHS does not have "Same Old Song" played repeatedly in the bar scene. It has "I'm a Believer," I think performed by Neil Diamond. And so the first time I saw the actual version, it was they used that song because they didn't have the rights for "Same Old Song" for home video. So they had to sub in something else they could afford. And the first time I saw Blood Simple in the theater when it was re-released, it's like, wait, what's going on? I felt very confused. I was unable to ever track down a YouTube clip of that version. So I was like, I'm gonna buy this videotape so I can revisit that myself. And so now I have that. And I can kind of see, here's the thing. I can kind of see picking up a few more just as objects to put on the shelf. Like I'm on eBay right now to send you a link to this. And I actually would love this beat up old VHS copy of Halloween with original stickers on it from whatever store it was in. On the other hand, I'm not going to pay $250 for it.
Does this VCR, Keith, does it have like the little things that you kind of you have to like put them tuck them into like a screw on the back of your TV and then screw it in to, like
no it's a newer one, so it has the RCA cables.
Okay, that's but, nice.
Yeah, the coax cables. No, it does not have coax cables.
Yeah,
well, this has gone on for a while, as we should probably hit stop and rewind for the next.
I'm leaving this podcast
completely unrewound, and somebody else can handle the rewinding.
Yeah, but this is fun. Well, you know, in the meantime, if you return your tape sometime. If you don't, pay the overdue fee, and we'll meet you at the video store or whatever.
No, we won't actually.
We won't, unfortunately.
The video store in the sky at some point when we all perish.
We will all meet you at the video store. That's a grim way to end this. But anyway, thanks for listening, and we will be back with more soon.